today is August 20, 2020. I have a special guest. She is a yogi, a free spirit, and she has turned her trauma into liberation. Hi, Bree. How are you?
Hi, Margaret. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. And it was just quite interesting, I would say, how we kind of connected. And yeah. I think, yeah, it was pretty interesting, I would say. Maybe you want to elaborate to the people how we connected.
Yeah, so I started a new blog, like a new Instagram. I don't know if you want to call it a blog necessarily, but I had started it with an intention of really kind of having a voice for people that have gone through trauma, mental disorders, divorce, those kinds of things. And my journey through that and coming out through the other side to liberate myself and to try to voice that in my own authentic way. And it was just really interesting because about 3 days into just having that specific Instagram, I didn't even really have a lot of followers or anything like that. I didn't know anybody. This was just completely random. I had someone connect me with a woman's circle that was connected with I think your company you work with, Enagic. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for some clean water. And I think it was Shelby that I connected with first. And she was like, oh my gosh, I actually know a couple of people that live in Arizona. Let me send a chat to you with them connected to you. And so that was basically how I met you. So,
yeah.
Through Kangen water.
Yes. And you kind of randomly reached out and you're like, I want to be on this podcast and I want to talk about this. And the Zoom call was really interesting because in the previous episodes, we did talk about like trauma and I would say like the stigma, but I would say this episode, we're going to kind of go a little bit deep. And I think it'll just be more of like a darker realm of like mental health and mental disorder that necessarily we don't talk about a lot in society, and just talking about like the effects of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Definitely.
I'm your girl for that.
Well, I'm excited to have this conversation with you. And I think just the first question is, how would you define mental disorder?
Oh, there's a lot of clinical definitions, but in my world, some people call it, you know, some sort of a genetic thing. A lot of people think that it's trauma-based. I think that it's kind of cumulative. I think that there's a lot of factors that affect, you know, your synapses in your brain. And I think that for me personally, I feel like I was born this way. I think I actually did some tests, neurotransmitters, and found that I had basically no dopamine and way too much serotonin. So right there, I mean, there is a biochemical aspect to mental disorders. I think that also I have to speak on this because I think it's really important. I think that it progresses. It's a progressive disease or disorder. So it gets worse over time, not better. Mm-hmm. Kind of synonymous with, you know, let's say an alcoholic or an addict. You know, if you don't treat it, it's going to get worse. So that being said, yeah, I've definitely had a lot of different diagnoses and I've learned a lot about what it is. But in my experience, I think it's really trauma-based and genetic-based. So,
yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. I think I would say some people, they're like, well, just meditate or just do this and that. I mean, obviously it helps, but
yeah.
I think to like a certain extent that it helps. I told you I work at a group home and it's people who had substance abuse issues plus like mental disorder. So it can be anyone who's like bipolar or depression. So yeah. I'm like one staff with like 11 other women. So I have to handle like 11 different personalities.
Ooh-wee.
Yeah.
Yep. That's a lot.
Yeah. And I would say like obviously the meditation, like different like healing techniques help, but there's so much stigma in having these like mental disorders and then like taking the medication for it. So, absolutely. And I don't think there's anything wrong with taking these medications because they're like, well, like there's some people, they're like, well, these pharmaceuticals and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I mean, it is true to like a certain extent, but you know, we need biomedicine as much as we also need East, you know, like naturopath medicine, Eastern medicine as well. And, you know, people are different and they need different things. And some people really, they do need that biomedicine.
Yeah. And the analogy that I always like to refer to, and I have had too many times with my family and friends, because there is that stigma and there is that kind of a question mark look on their face, like, I don't understand. And of course they don't, because they're not, they don't have the disorder.
Right.
And they haven't lived through it. But the analogy that I like to use is that, you know, would you say to someone with cancer who is, it's a biochemical thing going on in their body, would you tell them to not get treated? Would you tell them to not take their medications? And also in the mental disorder realm, there's SMIs, there's CMIs, which is severely mentally ill and critically. And, you know, someone with schizophrenia, that's something that someone would look at and go, oh, they definitely need their medication, right?
Well,
I think the seriousness of depression and anxiety and the multitude of different things, there's a spectrum, a wide spectrum, and everyone's different. So each individual person, per se, has the depression to whatever degree, or anxiety to whatever degree, or PTSD, you know, it's really an individual thing. And it doesn't mean that it's less serious. It is just, it's equivalent to any other disorder in my eyes, in my opinion, from my experience. So,
yeah, I think like, well, like even like what I'm doing right now, like being like, you know, working in behavioral health right now, it just kind of like opened my eyes, especially working with people that are SMI. And it kind of just showed me like a different side to mental health that not a lot of people are necessarily aware of. And I think they don't want to be, in a sense, aware of, or like they're scared to be around these people. And, you know, I think, you know, we all need care, we all need support, and we need someone to be there for us. I know there's some staff that I feel like they're so used to, you know, being around like SMI people, or there's like a fight breaking out, or there's like yelling going on. They kind of become very, I would say like, they're just kind of so used to it that they're like, they just don't care. But we always need a, like a refresher class, or we always need like that empathy, or like, how can we help them like have better coping skills, like to go out in society and like not depend on like somebody else to help you.
Yes, you hit it. Yep. It's really, for me, it boils down to, and this is really only something that I was able to get to once I got on medication and in proper care and of right and sound mind, really, is that when you're in it, you have no ability to really control, you know, the impulsivity, the poor decision making, the erratic behaviors, just anything that's going on in your thought processes. You don't have the ability to control yourself, really.
Right.
There's something going on with the amygdala where, you know, you have that rapid shutdown, you know. There's just a lot to it that from the inside, you can't control it. And so the most important thing that for me that I want to point out is that these people need to be helped. They need help. I needed help. I needed other people to swoop in and go, you need help.
Yeah,
you know, it needs to be pointed out, and there needs to be a lot more compassion and empathy surrounded around this. And I think, like you said earlier, there just really isn't a lot of conversation. There just isn't. There's not enough.
Yeah. So. Well, I think even like the staff that I've worked with, like I feel like some of them don't fully grasp necessarily like what, and like when they go into like the job, they're like, oh, I want to do it, and then they go and do it, they kind of don't know how to handle these people. Because we've had like several incidences where like the resident, she AWOL'd, like she ran off, and they went That's and like funny. Ran after her, and I'm like, well, one, you I was like, well, one, you don't run after her, like if she AWOL'd, like if she AWOL'd, because she AWOL'd like once on my shift, and she just went, and then like she came back a minute later totally completely fine, like nothing happened. So you like, you know, there's just certain protocol you have to follow, and sometimes, you know, some staff can, they can be the aggressors, like they can be the triggers.
And, oh, absolutely.
And they don't realize it. Like I had a manager I worked with, and like some, like one of the residents would approach her, and she would like completely ignore her. And I'm like, well, that's not like a good way to have like, you know, this kind of environment for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's funny that you said AWOL, because that's something that I not necessarily have experienced myself, but I've been in facilities, you know, where I'm in lockdown, and I can tell you that it's really similar to feeling like that confinement mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're mistreated just as poorly as I would assume maybe a prisoner would be, right. Like actual prison mate. And there's just a duality, like you can't force your will, like you were saying, like you have to follow a certain protocol for your safety and their safety. And you really can't force your will on another human being, you know, even if that person is like, for instance, in my experience, you know, you need help, you have a problem, you need help. It was always more surrounded around like my drug use and my alcohol use. But what really wasn't pointed out was that, you know, underlying the main issue really was my mental disorders. Mm. So the duality of like, they couldn't force my will and they couldn't force me to go, okay, I'm ready. You know, I had to be ready myself. And then, you know, for someone, you know, as yourself or whoever that may or may not have experienced that level of depression or PTSD or whatever it is that they're diagnosed with, they need to further investigate and study the actual human being, you know? My experience being in a place like that, I wasn't treated as a human being. I was treated like a little lab rat or a number, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just a really odd situation to be put in when you're placing your, literally, your life. It's life or death for a lot of these people, including me. You're putting your life into people's hands that have absolutely no idea who you are, none of your history, you know, like they don't know who you are.
They don't.
They're taking 15 minutes of their time, not even looking you in the eye, asking you a series of like blanket questions from a piece of paper, writing it down and going, here, take lithium, take this. It's like, you know? Yeah,
right.
So.
Yeah, I think like, it's almost becomes, because I feel like I'm just like seeing it from the other side.
Absolutely.
I think like they're so like used to it, like at that point, that like when they go into these like whatever like facilities, group homes, treatment centers, and they're with like SMI, especially with like SMI, I think they kind of become numb, and then they're like, whatever, you're like the next person, like, and we can't really be like that. Like, we kind of have to be like, you know, empathetic, like these are people, and you have to see it from like, you know, the other perspective. It's like, well, they don't, you know, they don't know your history, they're just kind of going off of your story and like certain like diagnosis that you have. And I think it's just, you really have to, you know, have that one-on-one like interaction. And really like see, because I've seen staff that they really are like yelling at the resident, and you know, it's not like a pleasant experience to have. I can't like imagine like someone else, like you're supposed to be taken care of, but you're not taken care of. You're just made even more like mentally, like, you know, how do I say, like more mentally sick.
yeah, I can totally relate to that. I definitely had experiences where I left way worse than I came in, you know. I was so poorly mistreated and just kind of abused almost, to the point where I actually got to a point where I completely gave up on the mental health industry entirely. I just refused medication. I refused to go back to another therapist. I've had therapists rage out on me, cuss me out of the office for no reason. I mean, those people are, and from my perspective now, I actually look at your side of it now. I can place myself in your shoes and go, wow, that is a very difficult job.
It,
you know,
because
it's scary. It's an unknown territory. You don't know the depths of it. You haven't necessarily experienced their depth of it. And so it's really hard to help them. And I think your objective really is to help them quickly, right? Mm-hmm. You want them in, you want them out. But this stuff takes time. It takes a very long time. I mean, I'm turning 36 next week, and I'm just now getting, you know, this last year has been the most beautiful year of my life because I finally got the right help with the right people, you know? So I see it from both ends too, and it's just a tough situation.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I think just moving forward with that question, what were, you know, I guess the dark times that you went through? I know you briefly explained it before, but did you want to go like into depth a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm an open book, and it's, I don't even know where to really start with it. I think that's always been a recurring theme for me to get into a very, I've always been diagnosed as massive depression, like a major depressive disorder, and acute anxiety, which means, like, as I spoke earlier, I have no dopamine, so I'm depressed, and I have way too much serotonin to where I'm like anxiety ridden. Much so that I've had, you know, social anxiety disorder, and, you know, phobias of even going outside, couldn't look people in the eye, all the way through to like severe traumatic experiences, whether I brought them on to myself or not. I mean, there's, when you're sick, you generally you kind of attract sick people into your life. Mm-hmm. And so you just, it's just a swirl of chaos for me. It's just been one thing after another. And I think, in a way, for me, I can look at it as everything that I've gone through has been an outcome from my mental disorder. I can tie every single thing almost back to my mental disorder, the choices that I've made, the people that I've allowed in my life over and over again that I should not have, those kinds of things. I mean, going through my life and just feeling like every other week there was some sort of a crisis. Yeah. And then feeling like looking back in different stages and going, okay, I really don't want to do that. So how do I make this different? And then recycling and going back through the same pattern, because you just learn your mechanism and your way of your modality of living is to distract yourself and self-medicate. Because you can't, I mean, like I said earlier, you really can't control what is happening inside of you. Your emotions are all over the place. You're not regulated. You're not quote unquote normal, you know? So I was just grasping at every single thing that I could, you know, whether it be men or it be, you know, alcohol, lots of drugs, even just, you know, addiction to just chaos, just having something going on. So insidious, or just, you know, debilitating and detrimental to my growth, that like that was the only thing that I had to think about. So now, when, you know, moving forward, fast forwarding to the last year, I would say that definitely last year was the darkest year of my life. I had two kids. There was some domestic violence that occurred shortly thereafter. It was probably my third or fourth genuine suicide attempt. I don't even remember how it happened. I don't remember doing it. All I remember is waking up on the floor and there was blood. I crawled to my husband and told him to take me to the hospital, and didn't remember anything after that. But I had a subdural hematoma, which is basically a concussion and a brain bleed. And then following that, a lot of drug-induced psychosis and just not even being who I am, you know, just something else taking over me completely. And then divorce. And then after the divorce, getting together with this, like, a sociopath, like just the same patterns, but in such a dramatic, fast, hardcore fashion that, like, I was brought to my absolute knees. The end of last year was I always like to be synonymous with AA just because people know AA. Okay, that makes sense. It's synonymous with an AA bottom. I hit my bottom, plain and simple. And there was nowhere else for me to go, but okay, I gotta get some fucking help. Like, excuse my language, but I gotta
go. No, you're okay. You can totally cuss.
Okay, well, fucking, I will. But yeah, that's like the shortest version that I can give you. But yeah, you know, I would say my diagnoses really have been, there's a lot of them. Major depressive disorder, major anxiety disorder, PTSD, bipolar disorder, borderline personality disorder. Like, it's just, there's so many things. And I've always been very defensive, and I really, it puts a really bad taste in my mouth labeling anybody. But I had a really difficult time embracing the label and embracing that it was okay because of the stigma behind, oh, she's mentally ill, she's crazy. Just the label of being crazy. I mean, who in the world wants to feel that way?
Yeah, you know, nobody.
It's a separation, really. So, that's all I can really give at this time. I mean, there's a postpartum aspect too that I would like to touch upon. The postpartum that I experienced with my first child, again, back in that time frame, it was just barely beginning to be talked about. There was no conversation, and I had no idea what was even happening to me. You know, I was starting to think very, very dark thoughts. I was starting to feel suicidal all the time. I was starting to, you know, there's things that I'd want to say, but I don't want to offend anyone. But I think it's important that, you know that you're not alone if you're experiencing that. And I didn't know that I was. And I felt very, very guilt-ridden and shameful. Like, I just felt so horrible about the way that I was feeling and the thoughts that I was thinking. And I had, like I said, it's a real thing. It's a real, and it's a chemical thing. Your hormones are all over the place. I mean, in a way, I think it's really normal and it should be very normalized. And I think I love that we're having this conversation, and I'm very grateful because I want to one of my goals is to normalize these conversations and normalize mental disorders and mental health and how important it is. It's just as serious as any other thing, you know, alcoholism or addiction or, you know, even people with severe illnesses, like physical illnesses. So
your story like touched me so much, and you know, I hear this story but just so many different versions, and the thing is that it's not normalized. But it's kind of sad, and like a lot of people go through this, and that's the thing, it's just not normalized. And like when we have, I guess, you know, more of that like low vibration, you know, feeling depressed and sad, we tend to attract people who are manipulative, who are like sociopaths, who are narcissists, and they know how to kind of get in your head. And that's the thing, like, and I just don't think we intentionally do it, but when we're in that moment, we're like, oh shit. And then after we realize, we're like, oh my god, like they were total narcissists, like totally entitled, they just cared about themselves. And then you realize that, and then you start kind of building like, okay, like what is like there about me that I'm attracting like these type of people? And you have to really do that like shadow work and start to see like, okay, like I need help and I need someone to guide me. I need a mentor. And then like, I need to have the right people like in my circle. Cause when you don't have the right people, then like, you're just going to go like mentally insane. I think anybody would.
Yep. And I like that point that you do attract like attracts like. I mean, when you're sick, you attract sick, and it may not be the same matchup. You may not attract some bipolar freak like me. Like I tended to only attract seriously severe sociopaths. Like there's so many stories that I could share right here, but I mean, one of the worst was, like I said, I had mentioned a relationship post divorce. I mean, right then and there, you know that that's not healthy. Like jumping right into something a month past some really, really difficult, one of the ugliest divorces ever. And I'm with someone, and I think that, you know, it's natural to want to have companionship, especially during that hardship. But pulling someone in and just blindsiding yourself, just going, turning off all the red flags and turning them white, you know, and going, oh, this person loves me, you know. And it's funny because that time around, I really was aware, because I'd been through it so many times. I was very, very aware of what was happening. You know, I knew exactly who I was dealing with, and I just kind of let it happen for a while. And I knew in my heart that this was it for me. I knew that this was like the end. I just kind of had like a, what they call a come to Jesus moment, where I just said, you know what, I cannot accept this anymore in my life. I just cannot. And it wasn't really until I started my medications and really got on track, just the start of it even enabled me to say, no more, I'm done. And I walked away and I never looked back. And that right there, I think above all else, all the other modalities of, you know, how to survive with mental disorder, that right there was probably the hardest thing and the best thing that I've ever done. It was so empowering to walk away from just the pattern of attracting sociopaths. I mean, oh my God. So thank God for that.
Yeah, I feel you. I think it's just when we have those, I guess, liberating moments where, like, you know, we kind of wish them, you know, whoever, like, did us harm. And I think we're just like, you know what, we're not going to put up with this anymore. And, you know, it's time to walk away. And I think finding, like, our truth and finding ourselves, like, and, like, leave this, like, crazy behind. And because I had, like, those moments, like, I would say, like, 2017, that was kind of, like, my, like, break. Like, I was just, like, on, like, a breaking point at that point. And I remember I went to, like, a tarot reader, maybe I would say in, like, the beginning of the year, I went to, like, a tarot reader. And she says that, like, a couple of years ago, like, you were about to not go on the right track. Like, she says, like, and she was right, because, like, I remember the people I was just, like, around with, like, it drove me to the point where, like, I almost, like, contemplated, like, suicide. Like, I was in the bathroom, like, and I used to live in this, like, 4-bedroom house, and, like, nobody was home, and I, like, pulled out the knife, and I went in the bathroom. I'm like, you know what? I was, like, crying in the bathroom, and I was like, I can't do this. Like, I have to, like, I need help. Like, I need, like, to see a therapist. Like, I need to surround myself with, like, other types of people. And I think that was, like, the moment where I'm like, okay, you know what? Like, I need to, like, start, like, my life, like, over. And I need to get, like, my shit together. And that was, like, and then after that, I kind of started, like, looking into, like, the law of attraction, like, things like that. And that's when, like, my life, like, completely changed. Like, I was, like, a totally different person, like, years ago than I am now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, because I agree with you. I think for me, it's really about the awareness. Awareness is super key. If you are completely unaware and oblivious to your own nature, it's going to be a pretty difficult ride, you know. And I'm just fortunate in my own life and experience that I've always been hyper aware of myself, like, to a detriment. I've always been, you know, nervous and anxious and just anxious to please and just all that kind of bullshit, really. But I've been very aware of myself and aware of others in a way where it's very keen. And that, I think, has actually helped me out of a lot of potentially very dangerous situations, even though, yes, I've definitely placed myself in some critical places. But I think it's the thing I like to say is that, you know, when we learn how to fall so many times, we also learn how to rise.
Yeah.
And that builds a very unique resiliency. You know, I think that the key this year for me has really been about a mixture of, you know, the cocktail, they say, of my medications. And it really is trial and error. It takes a very long time and a lot of patience and safety. But just to continue to push forward and be really committed to your health, and having people, you know, there supporting you and checking in with you. And, you know, you really need to be honest, and vulnerability is huge. I mean, we could go off on all kinds of tangents here, but I wanted to speak a little bit about vulnerability, because you're vulnerable in this state. You're vulnerable with your disorder. It's vulnerable to feel different than everybody else. And it's vulnerable to not feel like anybody understands you whatsoever. You know, even your family, my family has always pointed a finger and going, you know, you need to get help. And, you know, we don't know what's wrong with you. And, you know, they always tied it, you know, like I said, with, they thought I was an alcoholic and an addict. And when it came down to it, once I started my medication, I have no desire to drink. I don't have any desire to use drugs. I don't. I'll occasionally smoke some marijuana, you know, like, that's, to me, that's my deal, and that's works for me. And I don't let anybody judge my treatment, but I definitely feel like, it's just, it's a vulnerable place to be in. And the key is that you have to stay vulnerable though. Growth is uncomfortable, as we all know. And really, really opening up and being vulnerable takes safety. It takes a certain amount of feeling safe. Actually, it takes, you have to feel completely safe. And I think for a lot of us, I would say, quote unquote, me, there was just never any safety. I didn't feel safe around my ex-husband. I didn't feel safe with my family. I mean, there was lots of chunks of periods where I was estranged from my family, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't speak with them. And it all revolved around all the mental disorders I had. But, you know, just it's a lonely experience and it's a vulnerable experience. But on the flip side, now that I'm being treated properly and I feel like I'm in really good hands, I've got a safe home, a safety net, a support group, a really great therapist, psychiatry, like everything, that I'm able to be vulnerable and actually feel normal human being. I say normal, but it's, you know, no one's normal, but normal-ish emotions. And even in that, I've been experiencing things and I'm just kind of like really overthinking it. And it's been pointed out to me by my psychiatrist and my therapist, like, well, now you're just feeling normal feelings now. It's not as dramatic as it was before. You weren't going way up and way down.
Yeah.
You're just kind of like right there actually experiencing what's happened. You know, you're not shoving pills or drugs or whatever into your system. And pills, I mean like ecstasy and all that kind of stuff. You're not distracting yourself. You're right there in it and you're facing it.
Yeah.
And that's vulnerable, you know?
Yeah, I think once we like go through what we go through and, you know, once we get like proper treatment and like a proper support group and, you know, like more positive people around us, I think that's when like we start really shining. And I think we start like seeing like who we truly are and like, whatever happened in the past, like it was supposed to be, I guess in a sense, like a lesson, but we rise from that. And we're like, we're so much better than we were like a year ago or like even like a few years ago.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I feel like there's been pockets of my life, you know, because like I said, it's a circular cyclical thing. And I always had hope and I've always strived. But I never quite felt like I was thriving. You know, there was always a point where I'd hit another wall and I go, you know, the hopelessness and feeling like this is never going to end. It's always going to be this way. That in and of itself, and I know I'm not the only one. I think probably everyone in the world who has even felt sad, I mean, grief or anything. It's just like, this is so hopeless to feel like you're never going to get better. And so, you know, it's so important to have proper care and it's so important for you to be gentle with yourself when you are starting out. And it's important to really embrace that it is okay. It's perfectly okay for you to be who you are. There's nothing wrong with seeking help, just like it would be for someone who just lost someone and they went to a grief counselor, and that would be encouraged by anyone in the world, right?
Yeah.
It's important that we receive that encouragement because we ourselves, when we're deep in our, you know, mental illness, and I really would call it like, quite frankly, a psychosis.
Yeah.
You know, where we can't see the forest through the trees. It's really, really crucial. It's crucial.
Crucial.
I was going to say prudent and crucial, but it's just not all right, which is cute. But yeah, it's critical that you have people that can really, really kind of nudge you and positively encourage you. I will say this, I've had a lot of fear-based and anger-based responses from my loved ones, my family and just friends and people that have known me forever, even my ex-husband, you know, where they just really weren't there for me in a way where it was loving, you know. It was just, it felt very conditional. It felt like, well, you either do this or we can't be a part of your life, you know. It was really about their fear and their not trusting me anymore and their just bafflement about what it was that I was experiencing, and they just couldn't identify, and it was terrifying for them. So like I said, you know, now being where I'm at, and even throughout my whole life with my illness, I've always been able to place myself in their shoes and understand why they would respond that way. But I would say that another very, very important component to, you know, getting help with your mental disorders is that you also make sure that the people who are caring for you, which is your family, your friends, anybody that is supporting you, you know, they have their own support system as well, because they're also dealing with their own, you know, experience with it. And it's hard. It's really exhausting and trying for everybody involved. It doesn't just affect the person that has the mental disorder. It affects everybody.
It does.
And that's something that I just couldn't see until I got help. It was all about me, you know?
Yeah. So. I think it's definitely seeing it from the other perspective too. It's because sometimes when you have someone you love that has like a mental disorder, and, or you're, you know, working with someone that does, like, it could be very, like, you know, emotionally, you know, draining to the other person or stressful. And then, you know, then you kind of start realizing like different like techniques, like how can we, I guess, like redirect them, and then how can we like better support them. And then even like reading different things, and even like learning myself, it's like, how can I be a, like a support system to someone who is like SMI or CMI or people who have had like substance abuse in their past, and like what led them to having it. So I always try to like I always try to see it like, okay, like obviously me getting angry at them or frustrated like I'm not like, because there was times like I would get like very frustrated, and then like I would just have to see it from like the other perspective, like sometimes like that person like really can't help it, and like, and you know, we obviously we get like impatient, like, well, why do I keep telling them not to do it, like they still do it. And then you really have to see like their like diagnosis, and like how we can, you know, be like that support and like really fight the stigma for it, and like, and you know, maybe take those like extra classes.
It is I love what you're saying, because it really just, it hits home. I mean, the amount of acceptance and patience and listening that, you know, people on your end, or, you know, my family or whoever, the families and friends of people that are suffering from these disorders, they can't help themselves when they're in it. They just can't. They don't have the ability. So the amount of acceptance and patience and willingness to listen, really listen to someone, to kind of even start to understand how you can help them. Yeah. And then also asking them, how can I help you?
Yeah.
What can I do for you? And I've learned that through my practices with, you know, practicing yoga and meditation and just a lot of Eastern philosophies, is that it's very important. Kindness and compassion are very, 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 they're just the center of love. You know, and truly being loving to someone is being there for them selflessly and just saying, hey, I see you. I love you. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
I see that you're in pain. How can I help you? What can I do right now? Because you don't know, but they might. They might.
Yeah.
They might say, hey, I don't know, dude. I'm going out of my fucking mind. Or they could say, you know what? Like, can you just hold me? Can you please? I've like literally had to ask my parents several times. I've had to coach them on how to treat me. I'm like, when you do this, it triggers me, and I need for you to do this instead. I would prefer that you come over here and hold me and touch me. And you know, there's just certain things that different people need, and I think asking the questions is really, really important. Also listening is very good. And all of this takes time, you know.
Yeah,
for both parties, both sides. So
yeah, I mean, definitely both parties, like it has to be, it's a lot of work, but I think in the end there's the beauty of it. And I think I would say like most of the time, like, you know, when there's that good process, it becomes very beautiful. And I think it becomes even like, you become even more closer to your family or your friends that are with you.
Oh man, totally. Yeah. This has been such a blessing for me. I I mean, I might cry because this was the first time. What really caught me was that my family really started to see my deterioration last year, and they started to understand and really open their eyes to the fact that this is not about drinking, this is not about drugs, this is not about anything. This is about this person needs to be on Medicaid. This person needs help. It's like treating someone who has a physical illness.
Yeah.
Her leg is broken. Could she walk herself to the damn hospital? No. You need to pick her up and carry her and take her to a place that can help her. You know, it's hard. It's really hard. It's a lot to put on somebody else. It's a lot to put on my family. But when they finally opened their arms up and they said, "We're here. We will not let you fall." That was a moment for me that completely changed my life.
Yeah.
It was exactly what I needed to hear at the exact right time, and it was beautiful. Like you said, the relationships, the rebonding that I've had with each member of my family has been so, like, baffling and beautiful. Like,
yeah.
I just can't. It's like surreal. I'm like, really? We're here already again? Like, amazing.
Yeah, it takes. Yeah. It really takes time. I think.
Oh yeah.
Both parties, it really does take time. And then once we, like, educate ourselves a bit, and then we kind of, like, reach that, and then the other party reaches the point where they need help, then there's kind of, like, the healing process for everyone been kind of, like, you know, affected in different ways. And I think that's amazing that, you know, that they were actively listening. And, you know, there's different types of, like, listening. There's active listening, and then there's, like, some people, like, when they, you know, like, let's say, like, I'm talking to you about something, and then sometimes, like, I don't even need advice. Like, I just really just need to vent it out. Like, I'm just like, I just
absolutely
I was like, I just need to tell someone. I don't care what you say. I just need to, like, release this right now.
Yep.
So
we have a rule in my family. I have a rule with anybody, really. I've created boundaries, which is another important aspect, but I go, I just need you to listen. You don't say anything. And that's a rule that we've just created with my family. You know, whether it be I need to be heard or they need to be heard, zip the lip. And it's so powerful when you just sit there and you don't think of anything to say. You don't try to fix it. You don't even try to take it on. You're just there to just listen. I mean,
yeah.
There's so much power in that. So I agree.
Yeah, because I think before, and I would say, like, my previous, like, you know, when me and my boyfriend used to, like, fight, and I kind of noticed, like, he would point out something, and then I would point out something else, and then it would just be, like, this back and forth.
Yeah.
And
the blame game.
Yeah, the blame game. And, you know, sometimes, like, even, like, when I will, like, go up to somebody and say, well, like, you know, this is, like, my problem, you know, this is, like, what I have a problem with you, and then they'll go and bring up something else, and I'm just like, well, like, that's not, you know, it's not really cool. Like, I'm just kind of like, I'm going one topic, and then you're bringing up something from, like, months ago to, like, something else. And that's like one of my pet peeves. And I'm just like, well, why didn't you just tell me that, like, then? Why are you bringing it up now when I'm bringing up, like, something that's bothering me? And then the topic completely switches to that person talking about something that I did. And I was like, you know what? That is totally gaslighting. And
yeah.
I don't like that at all. And, like, once you learn about all these different things and you, like, are aware of it, you're like, that's not cool. Like, I feel like if someone's coming to me and they're upset about something, then we need to, like, actively listen instead of, like, bringing up something from the past or, like, blaming something. And I feel like we're all guilty of it, but I feel like it's being aware of it.
Yeah, it is awareness. And, I've done a lot. I've dug very deep. I've done a lot of inner work. Oh, and it's not easy. It's the toughest thing ever. But the past is irrelevant, plain and simple. It just is irrelevant. I mean, there is definitely virtue in taking accountability, which is something that I can definitely say. I've always had that ability to go my arms way wide up. Yep, that's me. I did it. I confess. I admit that. I admit my faults, and I'm aware of them. But the action to take really is to just ask for forgiveness and move on. You know, the past is irrelevant. Bringing it up over and over again is really not serving anything or anybody. And I still, to this day, I have some issues with that with my ex-husband, and we've worked on it. It's been about a year since the shit show, but we're really in a good place now. And I just feel so fortunate for how my work, and I wouldn't say that it's just my work here, but I think a major component was that I really needed to get healthy mentally. You know, it was time. It was just simply time. But now that I really have been serious and very committed and disciplined about it, the outer world, you know, everybody else is seeing that. And it's like, I'm like attracts like I'm attracting more of the same. Like when I'm kind, I'm receiving the kindness. When I'm patient, I receive the patience, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And even with my ex-husband, you know, his nature has always been like, he really likes to dig up the past. He really likes to throw back years and years of just irrelevant things. And I don't actually do that. I say, you know what? I would appreciate that you don't do that anymore, because I don't do that. I've never done that with you. And it doesn't serve a purpose here. If you want to have an amiable relationship for the sake of our children, because that's the only focus that you and I should have. And that shuts them up pretty quickly. But, you know, it really is important that I stay humble and I stay, you know, I take the higher road. And that is a very strenuous job for me. You know, everybody runs out of fuel. And I think that in the past, I felt like a normal person would, you know, they need their exercise, they need to eat healthy, they need to have some sort of a structure to life, gratitude, all that kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's for a normal person, or even someone that's, you know, having even kind of a weird circumstance or a hardship. But for someone on top of that with multiple disorders, I've had to work 10, 20, 30 times harder than the average human being every single day just to feel normal.
Yeah.
You know, it's exhausting. I mean,
it is exhausting.
It's too much. And so at the end of the day, just knowing that I've done what I can, and I've held myself in integrity, and that even if I have a shitty day and I fucked up and I raged out at someone that tried to hit me with their car, which was like 2 days ago, by the way, woo-wee, I about cut that bitch off and choked her on the ground, but let's not go there. I don't have rage anymore, but like, you know, it's going to be a lifelong journey, I guess is what my point is that we all of us are continuing to learn about ourselves, to discover the shadows and work through them. Yeah. And the more that we just, like I said, the vulnerability is key. Like the more we just open ourselves up to sitting in that pocket of discomfort, because it's so, so uncomfortable, and just allowing it to be there. You know, my experience is that I just needed to allow it to be there. Not try to change it, not to try to resist it. Just let it be there.
Surrendering.
Yes, thank you. Thanks, Margaret. That's what I'm trying to say. So surrender to win.
I mean, I really like enjoyed this conversation with you. I think like having the experience of like, you know, working with different, you know, like that group specifically, I think it's been very life changing. And I think it's brought me like a lot closer to like, you know, looking at different aspects of mental health and like, how can I be like, you know, maybe do like treatments with them better, or like maybe ask them like, you know, just different questions and things like that. And like, I would always like Google stuff because I'm always learning, and I think we're all always growing, and you know, that's like the beauty of it. And I think my last question is, how did you find the beauty in this process?
That is such a beautiful question. The beauty for me is just this. You know, the beauty is that I've come through the other side of it many, many times. And now I'm in the spot where I'm happier than I've ever been. And it was really that final decision of no more. You know, when you finally really reach that bottom and you go into a space where you're fully, fully committed and there's just no turning back anymore. The beauty is that now for me, all I want to do is be that resource. I want to be I want to serve others through, from my experience. I want to be a part of a movement where I can, you know, I can have different conversations and I can, you know, open people's minds and hearts to this journey and how it feels and what it's like to be, you know, diagnosed with mental disorders and just the whole process. And the beauty for me is that, you know, connecting with, you know, like you and anybody really at all that's going through something, that I've had so much compassion. I've come to a place of just really being able to withstand anything. The strength that I've accumulated in my life from all of these things, it's beautiful that now that's a gift for me. I look back and I go, wow, you know, you said something in the beginning of the conversation about, you know, it brought you to where you are. I'm very grateful. I wouldn't change a damn thing, to be honest with you. In and of itself, looking back through all of it, it is a beautiful thing. It's like art, you know, and now I can take this and I can utilize this to empower other women who are, you know, either experiencing it or have someone, loved one that they're dealing with. You know, I want to be that resource and that voice. And that's my mission, really, is to continue to facilitate these conversations and make it just a well-known thing, you know, change the narrative about mental illness and how we help one another in that. So, yeah.
Well, I think even like this podcast, I mean, whoever's listening, they're probably like, yeah, we're like, whoa, like I did not like know that. And then I was like, yeah, it's like, you know, supposed to inform, educate anyone who's listening. And I think it'll be really good for anyone who is listening to this podcast to really like understand like the concept of mental illness, because I know in previous episodes, like, you know, we went through like different healing techniques and trauma and things like that, and we briefly like went through it, but then this is really like diving deep, and I think it'll really help a lot of people. And whoever's listening, you know, whoever's going through whatever you went through years ago and somehow this episode popped up on Spotify, yeah, or Apple Podcasts, they're like, I want to listen to this. And you, yeah, never know whose life you might change.
Absolutely. I know I gained two beautiful children through, yeah, this experience. I became a mother through this experience. I'm brought to a place of liberation and freedom and connection with God and just different deities that I've, you know, Buddha and Kuan Yin and all that. Just this practice. It's about practice. And
yeah,
there's so many beautiful things that have come out of this experience for me. And at the time, maybe certain things didn't feel that way.
Yeah, it doesn't when you're in the moment.
Yeah, exactly. But I always knew, I've always had this sense in this belief. And I think it's really important, especially for people who have mental disorders. I think that it's important to have that higher power, and just developing and really opening myself back up to having that relationship with my higher power and having that daily practice of meditation and yoga and, you know, intermittent rage sessions or just hashing stuff. All those, it's all, that's another point I really want to, is that I think all emotions, negative emotions, are really downplayed. I think it's so important that we express emotion. They're there to show you something, and they're there to be experienced and expressed to their fullest. So anyone listening, if I would say anything at all, if you're going through something, experience it to the fullest degree. You know what I mean? And reach out and let someone know. You know, you're not alone. I can be your resource. Like, I'm here for anybody, because I get it. I really do. And I think that it's so important that we honor our emotions, we honor our diagnoses, right? We honor who we are fundamentally. And there's nothing wrong with that at all.
No, there's not. And
never.
I think sometimes when we're like, oh, we have to stay in this positive state, and I'm like, it happens. Like, we go into the negative state, and you know what? That's okay. Like, sometimes we have like you know, like something in the past, like angered us, or in the present, like someone like pissed us off, but it's just like acknowledging it. And how can we cope with it? Like the thing is like, but you know, are we doing like better coping skills we did than in the past? Cause there's some people, they would like literally just yell at the person and, or like physically fight, and then maybe like, and then maybe that person changed and they're like, okay, like I'm angry at this moment, but I'm not gonna fight. I'm not gonna argue. So definitely better cope, you know, we have those emotions, but we have to do better coping skills as well with that. So make sure we're not fighting or yelling at each other's throat.
I really want to modify your behavior and just, like I said, just honor your emotions and take it day by day. Take it slow. Be gentle and kind to yourself and really, I don't know, I want to say something really poignant, but I really feel like the point of what I'm trying to do is to just embrace, you know,
embrace the process.
Embrace the process. It takes time. It's not easy. It does require a lot of help and a lot of love. And when you can learn to really balance that out with, you know, receiving help and also being able to contribute the gifts that you've received through your process. I mean, I feel just really grateful and fortunate for all these connections that I've made and the ability to even have a voice right now is, I mean, if you would have told me even a year ago that I'd be on a podcast speaking towards mental health and anything like that, I'd be like, okay, you know, impossible. So, you know, anything is possible. And I really think that we are guided divinely. And I think that if we receive that guidance and we receive and open our hearts to receiving help and having faith and being vulnerable and honest with one another, I think that anything is possible. I think that it's just an individual experience and everybody has to kind of trial and error with what exactly they need. And I think there are support groups, there are different kind of things like that, but at the end of the day, you have the power to change, have the power within you. And to never ever give up. Don't ever give up.
I love that was a really good ending to this podcast. And anyone who's listening, where can they follow you?
I am Instagram. My Instagram that is specific to my mission is free.brie.liberation.
Okay. And I'll have it on the bio as well if anyone wants to follow Brie. And I just want to thank you so much. It's been a really amazing talk, and I hope you're having a good rest of your night.
Yeah, thank you so much, Margaret, for having me on. I am thrilled with our conversation, and anybody who wants to reach out to me personally, I'm here. I'm here for you. Let's chat. And thank you, Margaret, for having me on, and have a beautiful night.
You
and
too.
Just relax. We're going to relax, and hopefully we can connect again soon.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to Vegas next week, so I'm so pumped. I'm going to have the time of my life there.
Girl, you better be careful. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
That's what they say.
Yes, trust me. I can't tell you about my experience in Vegas. I just can't. It would be wrong.
No, that's a different type of story, a different type of podcast.
Yep.
Oh my goodness. Well, you have a good night.
You too, Margaret.
Bye-bye. All right.
Bye-bye.